हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 3, Transcendental Attributes of Bhagavan, page 61. The meaning is this. The name is Chintamani since it bestows everything. Not only that, it is directly Krishna having consciousness like him. The reason is that it is non-different from him. Right? So the reason the name is having consciousness can give all the benefit and everything because the name is directly Krishna. Right? It's just another form of Krishna. How can such a name be generated in the senses of a human being? Right? That's the doubt. It does not arise from the senses. Sense, like the Vedas, is simply made manifest in the senses of a human being by the Lord himself. So it's not through the senses that we know and understand the Veda or the name. It's because the Lord manifests through the senses, but the Lord is the one that's doing it, right? So this idea that through my intelligence I'm going to understand everything, you know, in the Veda and spiritual and all these things, doesn't apply, because the Lord being transcendental, he cannot be perceived by the senses. Therefore, unless he reveals himself, then we can't know the Lord. So that if we are reading, we're getting understanding and all that, we have to understand that's by the Lord's grace. The sound of the Vedas is very difficult to comprehend and manifests on different levels within the prana, mind, intelligence, and senses. This Vedic sound is unlimited and deep like the ocean. Right? So the Veda itself is unlimited, just like the Lord is unlimited. So from the same passage, so much can be understood and go deeper and deeper and deeper. Therefore, in the Vedic verses, you see that it is mentioned about when you're describing the technicalities of the verse, one of the points that is described is which sage became perfect meditating on that verse. Right? So sometimes it's a group of verses or even just one verse. And so if that one verse, by that, meditating on that, they can come to the platform of self-realization. That means everything's within the one verse. Right? So if you're dealing with Krishna, if they're non-different from Krishna, then that means is that, yes, its approach is external form, or let's say, the particular form that is manifesting, what particular qualities in that are just particular qualities of Krishna. So that means every verse being Krishna, but they're bringing out a different quality of Krishna. Does that make sense? They're not something different, it's one thing. Does that make sense? So it's looking at the same thing from different angles, different understandings, different approaches, but you're studying one thing. Does that make sense? Yes.
So before, for example, Purusha Sukta, when there is a mention of sage, so this is what you mean that...
Yes, it means that sage became perfect by studying those verses. Yeah, sometimes it'll have... Means it's whenever there's that chanting of that Vini Yoga. So sometimes it's for that whole group, it'll be one sage, you know, it's one Vini Yoga. Sometimes there are two or three. Like in the Samveda Purusha Sukta, I think there's three Vini Yogas. So that means three different persons became perfect by studying that. So it has to be appreciated that there's unlimited knowledge there. So the idea, okay, I've read Gita, now let's go on to something more. No, everything's in Gita. It's just the form that it's doing is that it's approaching through essence. Right? Because it's Nyaya Prashtam. You know, it's coming from that group. that in the essence of the Upanishads is then given in the it's not Nyaya, I mean it's Prashtan Traya. It's part of the establishing. And so it's just giving it from that aspect of the Puranic aspect, the simple essence and all that. It's giving. But it has everything in it. So you'll see is that all throughout the scriptures as they go, then the acharyas, quoting Bhagavatam shlokas and this and that, Vedanta, so they'll also quote Gita shlokas. Because it's saying the same thing. Right? It's just that in a language and that's more approachable by us. But it's still the same thing. There isn't more knowledge. Like, whatever philosophy is there in Gita, there isn't any more philosophy given anywhere else. It's just going deeper into that same philosophy. Does that make sense? So if you don't understand it in Gita, you won't understand it somewhere else either. Does that make sense? But I'm just appreciating the Gita, then you can take it and go further. Then in Bhagavatam, that same knowledge will be given in the deeper fact. Then in Chaitanya Charitamrita, deeper again. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
In Kali Santara and Upanishad, it is mentioned that by chanting a certain amount of times the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the practitioner will achieve mantra upasana.
Right.
And it sounds very mechanical. It doesn't say, a mood or whatever. Just chant the mantra and then you'll become perfect by that process.
Yes, because there it's just mentioning that, because in that it's pointing out that position. But other places it will be describing the qualities required. You know what I'm saying? Just because one thing just says, let's say we say, okay, okay, so how are we going to work today? So, okay, you're gonna drive your car. But just because it said just you're going to drive your car doesn't mean that all the knowledge that goes into what it means to drive a car, that you have a license, that you're of a proper age, you're a proper physical, all these things are included. Does that make sense? So when it says that, by chanting it, whatever it is, 30,000, like that, then that means with that full concentration, the proper attitude, the proper, everything proper. It already means that. Like that. Does that make sense? So because it's getting down to the essence, it's working on people that already have an understanding. And so then they can just give these very nice ways of just catching how everything's there. Sarvam Kalvinam Brahma. Everything's Brahman. So that means everything's coming from Krishna, because Krishna is the person. It's his sarup that's the source of all energies and all qualities. That means everything that you see manifest is all coming from Krishna. It's all his energies. And particular combinations of those energies with those qualities and everything. And so, therefore, if you understand that, you can see everything connected back to Krishna. Therefore, there's nothing you can't connect to Krishna. Right? Literally. Means naturally the first thing we want to do is, what about, and we'll mention something disgusting or, terrible or like that. How can that be, because we have to. It's like, what I'm saying? It's just like it's sitting there, the dog has to sniff it. It's just we have to. How you say, being brought up, born and bred in the, discussing with Goswami Maharaj yesterday in the, the Nindaka Sampradaya, that we have to offend anything and everything just because we can, like that, the Ninda Rasa, with all its centuries and everything of, the terribleness and, and all this and envy and, like this. So the difficulty comes up is that we'll have to say like that. But the point is that it's all Krishna. Otherwise, why are people attracted to sinful activities unless they're looking for Krishna? The jiva in the material world is doing nothing other than looking for Krishna. Every last one of them. But in ignorance, because of avidya, they don't know they're looking for Krishna. And they think it's the secondary forms through which Krishna's potency is manifest, that is what is giving them the taste. Right? They think the writing in their car is giving them the taste, or the particular clothes they're wearing is giving them the taste. No, it's Krishna's giving the taste, because the qualities of those things, those are Krishna. So everyone is looking for spiritual life. Just they don't know where to look. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you're looking for spiritual life, but you're walking around in a mall or something. You know, it's not the place you're going to find it. Yes.
So the doubt is that Krishna is the subject. Krishna is the object. Krishna is the one who's given the experience.
Yes.
So what is that experience that we, you know, how do we connect with the whole process?
Because of Krishna's grace. Even the material, it's by his grace. But there it's just you do the work, you get the results. So by his grace, material energy will give you the results of your efforts. Right? But so using those material tools, then you can function within the material world. But Krishna's given it. He's the one that makes it work. Right? You know, it's just like at a business. You come there, you have your job, you do your job, you get paid. And so it's by the grace of who owns the company. But it's that you have to qualify. You have to have the proper adhikar, and you have to have the proper attitude and put in the proper effort. Does that make sense? It's there. But you're working with the material. So when someone starts to see the spiritual aspect, then Krishna will reciprocate there. So it's not any different. But the point is, as it's being pointed out, is that it's the same process, that as you surrender, Krishna's reciprocating. But it's pointing out is that you can't understand the spiritual by using material methods. You have to accept the instructions coming down from the parampara. You have to have that faith. You can't understand with no faith. Like they'll say is, it's all, you know, this faith and all that. We only believe in science and all that. But if they don't have faith, that if they go to the North Pole and sit there, you know, for the 3 months and do their test, that they won't see some particular type of atomic activity. They have faith that it's there. That's why they went. They didn't go there otherwise. Does that make sense? No one in the scientific world works in an area that they don't have faith in. So it's purely based on faith. Every living entity is functioning in the same capacity. It's just due to false ego, then they'll try to claim that, no, I'm different. Does that make sense? Everybody's looking for it. So the whole point comes down is that whatever everyone's looking for is that's because it's part of Krishna. Right? Because Krishna, he has senses. He then engages the senses. That's why we have that same propensity. But the difference is that he is the source of all that, so it is inherent in him, it's his sarup. Well, us, we have a part of that, but it only functions when it's connected back to Krishna. Right? Prabhupada gives the examples. You have the finger. Finger can pick up a rasgulla. But the point is, unless it puts it into the mouth, it goes to the stomach. Right? Unless the finger feeds the stomach, it gets no benefit. Right? Means you can take the rasgulla and kind of, you know, feel it, mush it around and stuff, you know. The finger will get no benefit. Does that make sense? Because being part and parcel of Krishna, unless we're engaged in the complete whole, then we won't get the benefit. So that's the problem, is that we're doing all the things that we naturally do as a living entity because of being part and parcel of Krishna, who naturally does these things. But we're looking at it that we'll do this separately then from Krishna, even though we're part of Krishna. You know, the hand wants to work separately than the body. And then thinks it'll be happy. But the point is this part of the body, it's not going to, there is no way for it to be happy otherwise. It's not an option. But we come up with our own philosophies and so that to make it out as if it is. You know what I'm saying? So everyone is simply looking for Krishna. That's all they're doing. They're not doing something else. But due to the avidya shakti, they don't know where to look. They think it's in the secondary. Right? They've left the primary and think that the secondary itself is the actual cause. The secondary is where it manifests. Just like cooking manifests through the kitchen and the pots and the pans and the fire. And all these different, you know, the different ingredients. That's where cooking manifests. But the point is those ingredients aren't cooking. I have a cauliflower. Is that cooking? Right? You know, this cauliflower is, you know, has 3 Michelin stars. You know? No. It's only through that it manifests. That's Krishna's arrangement. It's his potencies. That's how he does what he wants, is through his energies. But he is the sroop of those energies. He's the form of those energies. He's the origin of them. Right? Does that make sense? Then everything is happening. But we're under this illusion that it can happen otherwise. So the primary is manifest through the secondary. But the point is, the secondary only has value because of its connection to the primary. We have a kitchen that's never used for cooking. Right? Let's say we have somebody who's just come across, you know, a good amount of money. You know, like a celebrity or this or that. And they want to do. So they make this fabulous house. They make the best kitchen and everything like that. There's a good chance they'll never use it other than, you know, that electric teapot that's there. You know, you just put it on a little stand and it boils the water. Other than that, that's probably all the cooking they'll ever do in that kitchen, even though it's a fabulous kitchen. You know, best in the world. Best guys made it, best ingredients, best everything. But cooking is not manifest because they don't use it. Does that make sense? So we have this idea, no, the secondary is making it itself. That's like the toaster is working on its own without electricity. And it's like I heard an anecdote that in Rome, you know, during the time, you know, Caesar and all those guys, then they had running water, you know, because they had the aqueduct and they had a way of bringing it into each house and had a tap, you know, like that. And so somebody that was from out in the countryside, you know, also aristocracy and all that, but they didn't have that. But he came in and saw that, and he was really impressed with it. So he had his servants pull the thing out of the wall, so he could take it back to his place and put it into the wall so he'd have running water. So he thought that the spigot sticking out of the wall was the source of the water. No, it was coming from the aqueduct, you know, which was coming from wherever they got it. Is that so like that, we're under the illusion that the secondary is all in all. So we're trying to operate the secondary on its own. And think, but the point is it can't function on its own. It's only functioning because of Krishna's potencies, by Krishna's will. And therefore, then, we're getting the effect. Does that make sense? Hey, Haribao? Hello? If you want to run these machines and that, close all the windows and doors, because we're trying to have a class here. You know? I mean, it's important work, but just know that it doesn't trump everything else. Okay? That trump is coming from, I think it comes from playing cards, that aspect of trump. Yeah, the trump card means the one that wins, not the President Trump. Is that clear? So that's the illusion. So that's why Prabhupada is saying, all we're simply trying to do is that we're not separate from Krishna. We're a servant. We're the soul. We're servants of Krishna. And we want to serve in that submissive mood, in that mood of bhakti. That's all the whole mission is trying to do. That's its whole purpose. So we're so much, you know, covered by the modes of nature that we can't see like this. So then we'll take it from the secondary, because I'm doing this, I'm chanting, therefore this is happening, I'm doing that, therefore it's happening. You know, all these different things, that's why it's happening. Well, no, it's simply you're functioning in a way that Krishna will reciprocate with you in that capacity. Is that... So, therefore then, in Upanishads, then you're going to get that being that they're just giving the essence. They don't necessarily get into detail. If they do, they get into more the technical, metaphysical, and all that. They don't get into necessarily the practical. That's what the Puranas and everything else are getting. So it's already understood that that's how you do it. When it says chant this much, it means chanting according to the definition of the Veda. Does that make sense? Yeah. Have something else? You want something?
You said that by Krishna's grace, the material energy will give the results of our work.
Yes.
Why is Krishna acting as if he's obliged?
Because it's a relationship. He's a person, we're persons, and so then you interact as people. Why else to do? You know, what else is there to gain? Means when we say prophet, the prophet's already Krishna's. It's his energy, right? Because the prophet is energy. It's already his. He's the source of it. So the point is he being a person, then he as a person likes to interact on that personal platform. So that's why even the material world set up in that way that it mimics the actual personal position, but it's not actually personal. Right? Does that make sense? Like you were saying before, you know, the few pages before, I was talking about giving up that concept of the universal form. Is that we have to give up the concept of the you know, the mechanical, the metaphysical, and these kind of aspects of the universal form to appreciate that that's all coming from Krishna. So giving it up means that we see that the material world functions separately from Krishna, and we're separate from Krishna, and we're the body. We have to give all that up, even though it's Krishna. Because you can say, well, Krishna's everything, so therefore the body is also Krishna's, and it functions, so I can, you know, use the body how I like. You know, because we always like to look for loopholes, right? So, but the point is no, it's still Krishna's. That's the whole point. It's Krishna's. Therefore, how are you going to deal with it? You know? So, in a sense, like the blanket, it's Krishna. Why do you use a blanket, right? Because it's nice and cooling like that, or, you know, it smells great, or tastes nice, or... No. So the point is that it keeps you warm. You know, or it has the potency to lift you higher off the ground than the floor. These potencies are Krishna. Right? So, therefore, then that potency is Krishna. So now, if the potency is Krishna, now what are you supposed to do with it? What's your relationship with it? How do you deal with it? Right? So you have to deal in a proper way. What's respectful for a blanket? In other words, the Vaishnavas are respectful to everything, even the blanket. You know what I'm saying? That's what you see. Children, they just leave them everywhere, throw them everywhere, do everything with them. You know? Does that make sense? Like, so that the whole point is no, we know. And then we know what it is. So it's made of wool. Therefore, that potency of wool, that it can do that, you have to respect the wool. So that means you have to deal with wool in its appropriate way. You can't deal in another way. You can't deal with it like it's cotton. You know, you can't toss it into the washing machine, you know, on that 90 centigrade, you know, for, you know, an hour and a half wash. You know, you come back and you'll have a, you know, a kind of overly thick handkerchief. You know, I mean, great. Who else has a handkerchief, you know, that's a, like that, or that quality? You know, people, wow, where'd you get that? You know, so. But, you know, you have to know what it is. Does that make sense? So, the point is the potencies are Krishna. That's why you're dealing. That's the point of religion. Religion means understanding these things, dealing with them according to what the nature is. Why? Because everything's Krishna. Right? For those who don't know everything's Krishna, then they just know the Veda says this and they're pious enough to follow it. Right? And if not, even they don't follow the Veda, then they follow things because by observation they figured out that if you don't deal with it in a particular way, it doesn't work. You know, you leave the blanket outside, it rots. You know, you put it in hot water, it shrinks. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, they know it by observation, by pratyaksha, right? The Veda, you know it by shabda, much better, because it's much more broad, it has much more knowledge, because the Veda is Krishna, right? But still, all these religious processes, because the religious means the inherent nature of something, it's still, if it's not connected to Krishna, because it's still secondary. Religion is secondary. Krishna is primary. So when religion is then infused with that connection to Krishna, the primary and secondary together, now you can, it's valuable in bhakti to please Krishna. Right? Someone asked the other day what the definition of religion?
That was yesterday.
Oh, he's not here. Okay, well, this is a more clear understanding. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, that's the whole idea, is that therefore, Krishna being everything, we're having to learn how to use everything connected to Krishna. Right? So it's not just, it's some techniques. It's that, the point is you can say it's mechanics. So if you're dealing with this mechanically, that means you're not seeing its connection to Krishna. Right? That's our problem with the smartas. We don't have a problem with the smartas because they follow the Veda. And they're very strict in following the Veda. That's not our problem at all. Our problem is that they follow strictly the Veda, but don't understand its connection to Krishna. They follow religion, but they don't accept Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So on the other side, then you have the sahajiyas who accept Krishna, supposedly, but don't accept the religious process. You understand? So you have to deal with both of them. You have to deal with them. Is that clear? Yeah. The Vedas, which are spread everywhere by me, Krishna speaking, because I possess many forms, right? Because he has unlimited forms that are all just manifestation of the one singular form. It means all those forms are within the one form. That one form is the source of everything. So therefore, he is spread everywhere by him in his unlimited forms, though he's just one. Pervade everywhere as Brahman, and possess unlimited powers, are perceived by the wise as Nod within all beings, subtle as the threads within the lotus stalk, right? The lotus stalk, when you take the stem and you break it and pull it, the threads there are super fine. You've ever seen?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're really, really fine, like that. They're even finer than most, like silk and things like that. It's a kind of silk, but it's just a lotus, because you can make cloth out of it. So, very, very fine. And so, like that, it's everything, it's spread in everything. It's as subtle as that. Like, the stalk is there, you don't see it, but it's inside. Everything's there. That's how it's all held together. So, Krishna, as Nod, is pervading everywhere. So, as Brahman, possesses unlimited power. Brahman has power. But it's still, the power is not personal, it's impersonal, in that it's generic. Does that make sense? If you say wealth, that's impersonal. You say, this money here, that's personal. It's specific. You understand? So, the point is Krishna is everywhere by everything, and that's what's described in the Veda. So our understanding of that is not if we're using it from the mundane platform, how Krishna is everywhere and everything is Krishna, you're not connecting it to Krishna as the person, the primary aspect, then you're going to look at the secondary and take it that everything is God. And that means I'm God. Right? Why would we want everything to be God? Because we're included in everything. Right? Does that make sense? So then that's where your impersonal comes up, because it's mundane. Even though they're called transcendentalists, they're still material. You know? And the karmis, they're taking the mechanics of the religion and using it without Krishna. Therefore, also material. Does that make sense? So, basically, your karmis and jnanis, they're taking Krishna consciousness, but using it without Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So, that's how you get that transformation from bhakti, you know, down to the Hindu, and then down to, you know, whatever it is where you want to take it from there. Does that make sense? Because if you ask, you know, most who are like this, the Hindu, they'll identify that they're devotees. They worship Ram, they worship Krishna, they worship Vishnu. But they're not. They're impersonalists, because they don't believe in the original form. Does that make sense? So we have to see is that you're using the process of bhakti, but without devotion. Therefore, it becomes karma and jnana. There isn't something else. It's not that, okay, there's, you know, what's going on in the world and all that, and then there's this Krishna consciousness that comes from India. It has that Indian, you know, culture and all that, but we're Westerners, and so it's not really for us and all this and that, so we have to make adjustments because we're so smart and everything like that, and, you know. You understand? That's total illusion. Because the point is, it's Krishna, it's Krishna's energy, it works the way Krishna says. Even in the West, whatever they do, it's working, they're observing Krishna's energy. And therefore, they're making their car and their smartphone and all those kind of things. Does that make sense? That's the whole point, is that it is all Krishna. So, they're using it from the ascending process, but they only ascend up to how much you want. What's the goal? What do I want from we're Westerners, we don't need all this kind of stuff? What's my goal? My goal is I don't change my lifestyle, but I'm a devotee. Right? Does that make sense? So as a beginning stage, that's great. That's where everyone starts. But that's not enough. We've been around a few years. And so just being a devotee is not enough. We want to be a senior devotee. We want to be recognized as a senior devotee. So what does that require? Because the attachment is not considered good. Right? Because the Shastras make it really, really clear, so we kind of have to accept it. So therefore, I have to try to point out that my being a Westerner and living that lifestyle is not attachment. So I have to make it a philosophy. Does that make sense? That's all. But all they're dealing with is the secondary religious aspect, but not coming from the Veda, just what is accomplished by, observation. Because they're taking it that's so advanced. Right? Now, as you know, they push, you know, brush your teeth. You know, wash your hands after going to the bathroom. Okay. But in the Vedic culture, do they brush your teeth and wash your hands after going to the bathroom?
No. Mm-hmm.
In the Vedic culture?
Before taking shower.
I'm just asking if these things are done. Yeah. We're not getting into the. We're not studying the Abhigamana aspect of the Pancharatra on how we're going to, what order we're going to do these in. Like that. Yeah, but you understand, it's like that. But the point is go back some years, and that first world, Western culture, that's the superior, you know, race, and all that, and superior culture, did they know about washing their hands? No. Did they know about brushing their teeth? No. All they figured out is you put on enough perfume and nobody cares. You know? So that's the fun of it, is that by observation they've seen that there's an advantage. But because they observed it, now it exists. So this is impersonalism. It's Buddhism. Well, the Veda is, no, it's coming from authority. Does that make sense? So, all these kind of approaches and all that, they're just immature attempts at trying to rationalize our own attachments, as opposed to how is it changing our consciousness so that we identify as servants of Krishna and give up this identity that I'm a Westerner. Does that make sense? Yes.
Now we've realized that material education is sambandha, sense gratification is prayojana, and the job is abhideya. Now they have the same thing.
Yeah. It's just by observation. They're going to mechanically come to the same things that the Vedas are. The point is you can learn all that, you know, as a brahmacharya in the Gurukul. They take the modern academy, it's 1,000 years old practically. It's taken them that long to kind of figure stuff out that, well, it should be based on, it's geared towards an occupation and that you have to have a particular attitude. Right? So, in the medieval university, when it started in Bologna, right? Then, and that's just when it's finalized, made into something big. It was already going on before that. Then your bachelor's was to get the right attitude. And then your postgraduate was for your occupation. That's all it was. But then somehow or another it became that you did, somehow or another from the bachelor's you're supposed to get an occupation. You know, so now, so that doesn't work. So now they've added in that the bachelor's not about the you know, the mood and all that. It's about the occupation, but they try to train you in the mood along with it. Well, before they focused on the mood, focused on the occupation. Right? Does that make sense? You know, did mood first, then occupation. Now they do occupation and try to add in some mood. But that's very recent. That's only in the last, some decade or two that they're starting to see that. Only because they figured out that the Japanese were better at everything than the Americans because of their attitude. You know, so therefore then they started to notice it. You know, well, the Japanese, it would have been there just from the Asian culture. You know, it would have been coming from India. So they'll work it out by pratyaksha, but the problem is how long does it take? Well, the Vedic is one person in one lifetime can understand all this and perfect themselves and go back to Godhead. Well, in this way, you know, it'll take them, you know, who knows, if it continues nicely, it'll take them thousands of years just to become human. And then, you know. So what the Veda calls the slow path, you know, that's just the normal thing that everybody does just to be human. Then you have the quick path, which is bhakti. Does that make sense? So therefore, we avoid all that simply because we see, it, according to this, what is being described here in the Sandarbha, is that you have to look at it starting from Krishna. Right? We're starting with self-realization, meaning myself, because we're not even aware who we are. So we're not the body, we're the soul and all this and that. Then we're part and parcel of Krishna. We're using the ascending presentation of descending knowledge, because that's all we know. But at some point it has to be, it's about Krishna. And so advanced means you look at it from the presentation, the understanding is descending, and you can present it descending. But if it's ascending and stops at that, then Krishna just gets added in how much he wants. Right? So now you're going to have Krishna in jeans and eating a pizza. And Mother Jashoda, I guess, has cooked that. You know, the original pizzioli. You know? Right? And all the cowherd boys are the local paisanos. You know, like that. You know, that kind of thing. Yes.
You said that that Hindus that consider themselves devotees but in worship like Krishna and Ram and Vishnu are still considered impersonalists. Aren't they still very much different than like Buddhists and
Yeah, of course. Of course. Because they're accepting the Vedic culture and all that, and accepting the concept of the personal, but in practical application they're not. Because where's the association? If they haven't associated with Sampradayic Vaishnavas, how will they know? Right? Nowadays, all your big preachers in India, where are they from? What line? Right? They're all Shankara at best. If they're Sampradayic Shankara, that's a good one. So they're just some guy that wants to make it on his own. You know what I'm saying? That makes sense. Yeah, so therefore they don't have good association. That's why it says association is the most important thing. But because of their acceptance of the Vedic culture and all that, therefore if devotees come, they'll invite them to their house, they'll do programs, they'll cook prasad, they'll do all these things. And then getting that association, then it becomes perfect. So karma and jnana only work because bhakti is what makes it function. Because karma and jnana, our material approaches to bhakti. You have the process of bhakti yoga, the practice of the liberated living entities in the spiritual world. And we practice what they do without its connection to Krishna. So if we're looking at the activities and results, we call that karma. If we're looking at, you know, the processes to get liberated from the material entanglement, we call it jnana. But bhakti already means you're already liberated and all your activities are done to please Krishna. But we're trying to take it as a goal of liberation rather than a starting point, and we're taking it that the results of activities are for our benefit rather than for Krishna's. Because if you please the whole, we're going to be pleased. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right, is there a difference between spiritual and transcendental?
It means you can use them as synonyms, but if you're trying to make a distinction between being out of the material world and liberated, then you'll use that as spiritual and transcendental. Then you'll call the relationships with Krishna and the devotees. Right? Does that make sense? So Brahma Bhuta, that's spiritual. Bhakti Rasa, that's transcendental.
Transcendental is material.
Yes. Yes. That's if you're using them both in the same sentence. But if not, you can use either one. But generally, when you refer to spiritual, you mean that you are situated beyond the material nature. You're above the material nature, unaffected by the material nature. So it's more talking about existence. And then the transcendental, it also means that, but it includes that the activities and the goals and all that are on that side also. It's just a matter of whether you're looking. In other words, when we say spiritual, we're more looking at the sambandha aspect of just our situation rather than the abhideya and prayojana. But it includes. It can be. They're synonyms. You can use it either way. But if you're using the same sentence, then that'll be the distinction. Yes?
Or is the secondary supposed to be used for the primary purpose?
Yes.
So when we begin to do that, we are quite conscious, but with time and success comes, again the faith in secondary gets nourished and the connection to primary gets lost. So how to maintain that?
Means always be aware. Means the point is what is the secondary doing?
Express the primary devotion.
Yes, so if you're not expressing the primary, then how is the secondary successful? You know what I'm saying? The success of is the pot producing the food? Because otherwise you just go in the kitchen and you know, pick up a pot and then, you know, look inside, there should be something there, right? You know, it's just you pick what preparation you want and what volume, and then you choose those pots, empty pots right from the kitchen, put them on the dinner table, you know, and then at the appropriate time, then there should be food in them, right? No, so the pots don't do diddly. It's the cook uses them to manifest cooking. Because we have to remember, it's Krishna's energies. They're non-different from Krishna. So it's through his energies you can appreciate Krishna. But the point is they're Krishna's energies. They're not separate. So that's the point, is we want to think that I did this and it's because of this. You know what I'm saying? But it's not because of that. It's just like this. Let us say we have Maharaj Yudhishthira, right? And so he manages an empire. So is that out of the ordinary? Or is that standard for a Kshatriya on his level? It's standard. So what's the big deal? You understand? So we're saying, yeah, see, I'm so special. But that's what your nature is. You're supposed to do that. You know what I'm saying? If you have a professional background and you become a devotee, if you don't do things the professional way, then what's the point? You know what I'm saying? Because that's what you can do. That's what you would do. That's your nature. You know, if you have a hammer, use it to drive nails. You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't use it for something less. You know, you wouldn't use the hammer to, you know, the kids there blowing those little soap bubbles, you know, and then use the hammer to break all the bubbles. You don't do that. Point is that your being able to function at that level is only by Krishna's grace. And if you don't do that, what's the speciality? What's so special? Because we think we're special, because someone else is it, but they can do stuff you can't do. You know what I'm saying? The doctor come in, can do this and that. Can he go into a kitchen, take six different pots, put them on the six burners at once, and cook six preparations at once? I don't think so. So then he can do his thing. Someone else can do this. Someone else can do the puja. He's the big doctor and all. Can he do sit there all day and do six offerings and artiks a day? Right? He could do it one day. It's Janmashtami. He's going to do that. Could he do that every day? No. Right? Could he drive a taxi around Bombay and not get a scratch on the car? No. So the point is, there's so many things he absolutely cannot do. I mean, seriously, would not be able to do. He'll write it off and, oh no, it's not important. But the point is, he can't do it. But he'll have the attitude that he's superior when he absolutely can't do it. You know what I'm saying? Let us say a disaster happens in Bombay. Who's going to get out of the city? That doctor or the guy who can drive a car?
Who can drive a car?
Yeah. Or if not, at least the guy who goes to the gym and can do some running. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that story Prabhupada tells of the boatman and the philosopher. You know, the scholar. So the scholar is saying, you know this, you know that, this much of your life, wait till that much of your life, and then the boat starts to sink, and then the boatman asks the scholar, do you know how to swim? And he said, no. And then the boatman says, 100% of your life is wasted. So that's the whole thing, is that we take it that we're so special because of our modes, but the point is our modes are just manifest through the universal form. So it's not us. We're 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. Can 1/10,000th the tip of the hair pick up a scalpel? Scalpel is one of the smallest items that is there. No. So then, who's doing that? Krishna's energy, under Krishna's direction. In the sense? So that's the whole thing. Prabhupada is saying, Krishna's giving the brain. He's giving the technique. So, therefore, we shouldn't become proud. So we see everything connected to Krishna. So we have this conditioning. We can use that in Krishna's service. Therefore, they can do wonderful things for Krishna. And according to the laws in Manu, then according to their particular qualities, we will give respect to that professional because of abilities that he can do. Right? But at the same time, as he has to give respect to others. Because their skills that they can't do. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. You know, yes, he's a neurobrain surgeon, but technically that's an art. So he's a Brahmin who's doing Shudra stuff, and he's good at it. Great. But he should never on any day of the week think he's in a superior position than the one who studies Shastra and teaches Shastra, or the one who worships the deity. Because now that's a Brahmin doing Brahmin stuff. Know that. Because Ayurveda means you come there, take the pulse, give them some medicine, and go through some treatment, and like that, with that and then they get cured. I mean, the Vedic system, surgery is, the barber does surgery. That's who does surgery.
In Europe, it's also like
that. It was like that also. Yeah, it's just, that's who does surgery. So it's not that great of a thing. It's been elevated, yes, we make it out to be something special, but it's not. And yes, if they need to, then at certain things, yes, they can do these things. You know, it's just like now, isn't the new things, the keyhole operations and laparoscopy and all that. It's just a new thing. But in Shushruta, where it talks about surgery, that's all they use. They make these special tools that you put in that. And that one, Atmatata was talking about, he was visiting one guy who was still one of the last people, this is back in the 80s, last people that still knew the Shushruta and could do those operations. And all the implements are made out of solid gold, right? Because gold is pure. So you just, you know, wash them nicely, you're done. You know, these other things are steel, you have to, like, you know, boil them, you know. So that, but it was this thing, it had a handle and it had this gold thing that was bent in so many far out angles. And that was so you make the incision, right? They put on a local anesthesia, so you don't feel anything. It doesn't make you unconscious. and then they insert the thing through that hole, and it, all those bends are so it can go around all the different organs. You can go in at one point, go around this organ, go that, and then catch the one that's behind it and do something. So, you know, it's thousands of years old. People were doing all that stuff. And now, oh, we figured out we're superior, you know, and all these, you know, savages here in India, you know, like that. So that's the point. We have to understand is that the potency comes from Krishna. Krishna's ability. He gives the Veda. He gives knowledge. And then we're able to do that, then that we're applying ourselves in that field of knowledge, and Krishna reciprocates. So the person's interested in medicine, puts in the effort, and then Krishna reciprocates. And then they learn. Like that. This lifetime, if they have the karma, they do. If not, they keep doing it, and after many lifetimes, then they'll be a good surgeon. Right? But the point is the potency comes from Krishna, not from us. So we have to understand this. We're simply a medium for it. We're an assistant to the activity. We're not actually the one performing the activities. Krishna's energies are performing, not us. Is that that way you can stay. Okay. You know, it's the same principle, that point. Krishna's everything. Therefore, then you have to see everything in that context. How would you, since it's Krishna's energy, how to use that for Krishna? It's his energy. It's there to serve Krishna. So how can we take part in assisting this energy in serving Krishna? Rather than how can I manipulate this energy to get my own enjoyment? Does that make sense? Good? Observing that all people in general were diminished in their lifespan, strength, and intelligence by the influence of time, great sages inspired by the Lord, situated within their hearts, divided the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.6.47. So Krishna is the one inspiring them, and then in this way, he is the Veda, he gives the inspiration that, and the ability how to then therefore divide the Veda. Right? Yeah. The commentary says, one may worry that something arising from the power of human intelligence will not be respected. Thus the verse says that the stages were inspired by the Lord in the hearts to divide the Vedas, right? So, it's pointing out is that from the opposite, right? Because we don't get that, because we're starting from the point of, I did it, I'm the special one. But here from the Vedas, it's no, all the knowledge is in the Veda, it's all coming from the Lord. Like that. So then one may say, okay, well then what people do doesn't matter. Right? But then it's saying, no, but the Lord inspires them within the hearts, and that, so he is the one that gets all these things to happen. Right? So all the sages, they speak all their philosophies, all these different things, then Krishna arranges that. So, yes, the human, and why would the human intelligence and endeavor be respected? What's the importance of that? Right? Because technically, if you're looking at tattva, it's just part of the greater, you know, Krishna's intelligence and how his energies are spreading everywhere. So what's the importance of it? Right? Because on that platform, the Brahman platform, it's just another energy and, you know, functioning mechanically how it does. It's because of a relationship. That's what's important. Like, why does the doctor want to be respected? Right? Be respected by who?
Patients.
And patients are?
Yes, customers.
Customers. Okay. As far as, and the, how you say, are they individuals? Okay, so he is an individual but wants to be respected by other individuals. And why? What do you gain from this respect?
Reputation.
Hmm?
Reputation.
Reputation. And what's the advantage?
More money.
More money? Okay. And then what will you get from more money?
Enjoyment.
And who's going to enjoy that?
Yeah.
Huh? Your family, yeah. The doctor's not going to enjoy it. Understand how that theory is he'll enjoy, but in reality, no. Yeah. You know, and then in California law, he loses 70% at the divorce, and yeah.
Realized.
Huh?
Realized.
Yes. Yeah. In other words, don't get married in California.
or don't get divorced.
Or don't get divorced. That's we're talking professionals here. That comes with it. You're a professional? Oh, you're getting divorced. No. How many divorces have you had? So, and why do they want to enjoy?
They want to be God.
Okay, they want to be God. But now in this, is there the element that they're a person?
Yes.
And the interaction of others respecting them is persons respecting them as a person. So then, why is that there?
They want personal relationship.
Yes, but why is that personal relationship, why is that important? Where does that come from?
Krishna.
Because Krishna is a person. And Krishna interacts with his energies, who are all individuals. He's an individual, therefore his energies are individuals. He's an individual, therefore his expansions, even in Vishnu Tattva, are individuals. You understand? So, individuals interacting with other individuals, that's the essential point. The taste of that. Because the point is, if you have the money, but it doesn't generate interaction relationships, what's the point? If you have engagement of the senses, but it doesn't generate relationships, what's the point? You have knowledge and skill and position and authority, but if it doesn't generate relationships, what's the point? So ultimately it comes down to that. People are people, they're trying to be people and interact with people. They don't necessarily know how to do that, but that's what they're trying to do. Right? So that's the whole point, is that therefore all these things are just for interaction with Krishna. Now, therefore the personal stuff that you're doing, you can use that in relationship to Krishna and work it on the transcendental platform, or you can not use it in relationship to Krishna and be an illusion in the material world and suffer. Point is it's Krishna's energies. How can you use Krishna's energies not connected to Krishna and not expect there'll be some problem? Since the point is relationships. Right? And Krishna is the center of all relationships. So therefore, yes, you have the family, but it's still Krishna. It's just like Nanda and Yashoda are married, and they have a relationship, but it's centered around Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah?
It's interesting, usually in the material world, first she becomes the wife, then he becomes the husband, then the children are there. So
yes.
It's like a continuation of that relationship.
Right.
But for Nanda and Yashoda, their main relationship is the Krishna, and then everything else, you know, falls in.
Yes, yes. So we're using, you know, we can use the principle, I mean, let's say, the details of how it works here in Krishna's service, because ultimately it's from Krishna. Like that. So that's why we start, and we start using it that way. But after a while, we don't identify with it, and we begin with Krishna. And then we look at what you can do. Just like, let's say, for a cook, you know, a good cook, he walks into the kitchen, right? So now, what's in the kitchen is what you have. You know, so let's say a good cook is over at a friend's house, and then they decide, let's eat something. So then what's going to happen? You're going to walk into the kitchen. What's there, you know, in the way of utilities, and what's there in the way of ingredients, and what's there in the way of the time? Let's say they don't have 6 hours to put together a snack. You know, they need something, you know, they can have together in 15, 20 minutes or less. Right? So all of that together then is going to make the particular cooking. Why? Because they're a cook. Right, someone's not a cook but can do some cooking. They'll go into the kitchen. They don't have this ingredient, that ingredient. Then they got to go get it, and it's miserable. Right, the cook, there's no misery. Right, because he's just serving cooking. The other one, then it's not about cooking. They have to cook. You see, so the same way is that. When you see it that it's service to Krishna, and therefore then what's your position, what you can use, what's the facility you have, then you engage that in Krishna's service. So right now, we are in this body, and this body has a particular nature, therefore we can function in a particular way. And that's today. After 10 years, it'll be different. 10 years before, it was different. Right? So we're just engaging what's there now. Yeah, do you have the saying in different languages of growing old gracefully?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have that concept?
Mm-hmm.
No? No one does.
Not in Russia.
They just get more drunk and fade away.
Yeah,
yeah, okay. But the principle, if somebody gets old, they just adjust with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, let's say, in celebrities, you see that there are those that, they, the older they get, the more money they spend to not look old.
Yeah?
Yeah? And some of them are successful at it and some of them aren't because they just, how much they have spent. And others, they get old, they just go with it. They just take that kind of position and that kind of thing. And that's the meaning of getting old gracefully. So if we're not the body, then you just, whatever it is, you do. You're a kid, you just do kid stuff. You're young, you do that stuff. You're middle-aged, you do that. You're old, you do that. Rather than, I'm not the body, I'll do whatever I want. Does that make sense? So that's what we have to see, is that when you start from Krishna, Sarva Dharma Paritya, means you're starting with Krishna and your relationship with Krishna as servant. Therefore, then what facilities do you have in your field of action? Right? Because the field is what you can work in. You can't work in someone else's field. You have to work in your own field. You know, what you can see, what you can smell, taste, touch, and that's with your organs, with your body, with your facility. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. That's why you can't use someone else's. Right? Unless it's through a relationship. If I ask you, hey, can I borrow this? You know, the clippers to clip the bush. Then you can do it. If I go over to your garage and just take it, then that's not good. Why? Because it's a problem with the relationship. Now, when the neighbor finds out I took his clippers without asking, he may be upset. Does that enhance the relationship? No. So since it's about relationship, that's why it's wrong. It's all Krishna's energy, so therefore we think it's all Krishna's energy, so it doesn't matter. Like, before we had this wall here, we had, you know, lots of flowers and all that. And everybody walking back from the temple would walk in, pick all the flowers, and then keep walking to their hub. And then we ask them one day, why are you picking all their flowers? They said, they're Krishna's flowers. You know, it's all Krishna's. We're taking it home, using it for Krishna. Like that. Then we put up a fence. Yes.
So coming to the yesterday discussion, can we say that in order to offend some person, we have to first impersonalize them?
Yes, yes.
And then offend them, because on the personal level, it's very difficult.
It is difficult, unless, of course, you're using those rasas to do it. Hmm. You know, it's like, what do you call it? The French swordsman with the big nose.
Gérard Depardieu.
Hmm?
Gérard Depardieu. He played. He was the character.
Oh no! But I'm just saying, who is the actual swordsman? Yeah, whatever. There's always like that. So he had a really big nose, right? And so people would make fun of his nose. And so then one young guy who didn't know who he was, right? Then, you know, when they're at the, you know, the tavern, you know, it always happens at the tavern, right? You know, like that. So then he makes some comment about his nose. And so then he gets upset. Is that, and it was a really like childish kind of stupid kind of thing, you know? And so is that all the better you can do? You know, and then he gets up and gives all these wonderful poetic ways of goofing on his nose, like that. But then afterwards they duel, and of course he kills him. But this principle of it's personal. You know what I'm saying there? Because then it's personally, it's more like you have now. You don't have that trope so much as where you have the good guy and the bad guy, and there's actually kind of a personal interdependence between them, because he's good because he catches the bad guy, and the bad guy's bad because he's against the good guy. So that's why you always see that they have to tell the other guy why he's doing it, you know, instead of just, you know, they don't, you know, just come up and shoot him in the head. They have to explain the whole thing first. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole, it's personal. You know, so nowadays it gets more and more impersonal, then you do whatever you like. So before it was personal, and they had that personal thing like that. So even if they did triumph, then now the life's empty, because their whole life was about that relationship with that other person who they now defeated. And now what? Now what do they do with their life? So ultimately, that's the thing. It comes down to the personal. So like you said, yeah, you have to make it impersonal to be really offensive. Or you have to be like Hiranyakashipu and really make it personal. You know, but... You know, but then they're using fear, horror. You see the demons, they're using the secondary rasas. But if we're not using any rasa at all, then that's just the impersonal. You know, that's like triad or something. You know, so, you know, I say mafia is personal, you know, and triad is not. Yes.
That's why it's easier to commit offenses on the internet. Cause
yeah, because it's impersonal. You don't, it's just like that, yeah. And the thing is, you can type faster than you can think. Like that. You know, it's like that. I think it was some Middle Eastern sheikh or something. He, you know, he had a thing about the Western, you know, the six shooter. You know, those, like, you know, the cowboys would use, like that, those kind of guns. And, you know, and it's always about quick draw, who is the quickest draw. So he was like, you know, he could have been at the time the quickest draw in the world. Like that. And but then because of that, one day, because he'd walk around with the gun and do this and that, and you know, just like this. But one time his son came in and he didn't know it, and somehow or another he got scared, and he just turned around and shot him. You know, before he could think. Like that. So that's the thing, is that that's the glory of the internet, is you can type quicker than you can think, and much of the time you don't even have to think, you know, like that. So therefore you have those emojis and stuff, you know, you don't even have to think.
So Maharaj, also in management, when you try to impose a system,
yes,
which is impersonal.
Yes.
At the expense of the relationship.
Yes, but then it works, it's done for profit. Because if you don't have to deal with people, it's more efficient than if you do. Right? Because mechanics, the consideration of the individual time, place, and circumstance, that is always going to slow down your profits.
Efficiency.
Yeah, your efficiency. So therefore your profits. So that's why the corporate, then they try to get rid of that. You see, in the political, they're always considering that, you know. But they, you know, they try to get around it. But it's based on people talking to people and dealing nicely with people. You know, everyone comes in; they're very cool. They sit at their table, they talk, they this and that. They don't get upset. You know, if it doesn't work out the way they like, they walk away, and you know, people start pushing red buttons and stuff like that. But point is everybody's cool. But in the corporate world, you know, they try to be cool, but somebody's going to blow up and this and that and so many things like that. It's a different thing. It's not about the personal, it's just about the efficiency of profit. Well, the other is efficiency of dealing with people, because the point of you're controlling people. Governance means you control people. So you have to deal with people. People control people.
Yeah. It's personal.
Yeah. Even though it may not be done nicely, but it's like, you know. You know what I'm saying?
Also, I've noticed those who are pushing these impersonal systems, they themselves generally not Buddhist people.
Yeah, they don't also. Because it gets in the way. You know. It's like that. So that's the whole point, is that it has to come back to the personal. And it's because Krishna is a person. It's not sentimental. It's just actual who we are. Who are we as a person? Who's Krishna? Who are the devotees as persons? Who are we as a person in this environment, in the field of activities that belongs to Krishna, therefore the field works in a particular way because he's a person, and we as a person, how we can be involved in that field of activities and to interact with Krishna. Right? So that's, then it's all personal. And so by practice, then it becomes much, you know, by Krishna's grace, that becomes more easy. But it always says that's the way the sages work. That's the way they see. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked us to be more tolerant than a tree. I mean, be more humble than a blade of grass.
Right.
And also,
so you want to know if you can be more humble than a tree and more tolerant than a blade of grass?
And offer all respect.
What about a cucumber or a potato?
And offer all respects to others. How we can see the personal aspect in this? Because we should offer all respects independent of the qualities of the person.
No, but you're offering respects because of qualities. See, it's say when we say despite the qualities, that means we're only seeing the negative aspects,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of our particular sampradaya, right? The nindaka sampradaya. Right? So the point is that we have to can we see the good qualities?
Mm-hmm.
Someone's a devotee. Now, how many means now from that discussion? I think it's with Rupa Goswami that you have unlimited living entities in the universe, right? Of that, very few are human. You know, in the human form, right? So you've reduced it down to, you know, very small. You know, you're on the other side of the zero there. Put the decimal, put so many zeros behind it, then start putting numbers. That's how many are human in compared to how many living entities, right? Now you take just now we zoom in on the humans. Of that 400,000, only a few of those are civilized. Right? That means they follow the Vedas. Right? So now you've gotten rid of most of those. And that now we zoom in on that. Now of those then who are actually properly performing their duties and all that, and you know, it's not just lip service, then there's not so many of those. Then we zoom in on that. Then it's a matter of who then is able to get beyond the material, you know, understand about self-realization, about the soul and all that. Only a few of those. Of those, how many are actually understand it, and how many are liberated? And then of those, and then it says of that, it's only saying few. Then it says once you got down to now, those who are liberated, now it says out of thousands who are liberated, there's very rare someone's not going to surrender to Krishna. So now that neophyte devotee that you have nothing good to say about and who has no good qualities at all, then how does this work out? You understand?
Maharaj, because the secondary is not descending from, secondary now, which is most of the secondary which is there, is not descending from Krishna.
It's just descending from Krishna. Where else does it come from? Kmart or?
modern, so many complications around the economic system or whatever.
Just no, but they're so still based on that. I mean, point is in the economic system, is there ever a thing is that you make less money than you invested? Is that ever viable in the modern economic system? So why is that? Why does that stay? You know, they're dealing with some goods. Maybe the goods don't exist, but they're still trading goods. You know, you still have to trade something. You can't just trade nothingness. You know, I have no shares of nothingness. You know, how much are you going to give me for that?
The customer thinks they exist, they don't care.
Yeah, that's the point. They think they exist. Yeah. Yes, sir? No? You raise your hand? No, you raise your hand. Oh. You have 30 seconds.
Once you told in class that the modern system is made by the impersonalists for the sake of money.
Yeah.
So,
what's not to see?
He was asking that secondary is not coming from Krishna. Just
it's all coming from Krishna.
But they're using it in impersonal way, like for the sake of money.
Yeah. The point is if you're not using it to please Krishna as a person in devotion, you're technically impersonal. It's just a matter of whether you're dyed-in-the-wool impersonal or it's just you just are in ignorance. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Govardhana ki.